time is being wasted? How much energy is being wasted? How much money is being wasted? If you're paying somebody 8 hours to work a day and they're distracted for 5 hours, why don't you just pay them for the hours they're actually focused?
Welcome, 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 and welcome to this week's Expansive podcast. Always awesome for you to join us. As always, we're always talking about how to be more expansive in technology, in leadership, and in personal development. And this week, we have a really special guest with us, and even the word guest in itself is quite a unique word when it comes to the expansive, as we don't really have guests. My guest is always Eric when I have him on my podcast, The Expansive. Eric, what's happening, brother? Welcome to my podcast. Nice of you to join me.
I feel like you've stolen my joke, because I welcomed you to the podcast before we even started recording, but it's fine. It's fine.
Thank you.
I'm good. It's been a busy week. Quite a few facilitations that I'm busy with. The biggest theme that I've worked with this week, which seems to be recurring a lot, is companies that want to call their teams family. And then at some point they get stuck because they realize that that doesn't scale. And then they try to figure out, like, what do we do now? Because, like, all of a sudden we are too complacent and we've prioritized getting along over doing the work. And now we're not getting the results we want. And it's been a big theme this week. So, like, how do we shift that?
Do you think using the word family actually is something trying to trap people into this idea that it's warm and fuzzy when it really isn't?
I think it is. I think there's a bit of manipulation sometimes. But I also think that if you're a small company, you kind of, it feels like that. Like, there's a belonging and, you know, everyone feels like they're getting along. But then the moment you hit scale, you realize, oh, what we used to do isn't working anymore. But then to change that environment becomes super difficult. Because now the behaviors that you want to introduce into that environment is very contrary to it. So it's a tough transition. But I'm always like, you don't need to go that route. Like, calling yourself a high-performing team is actually good enough on its own. So that's been my week. What's been happening for you?
Oh, all good. I'm back in Dubai. I know I always joke that Cape Town work is the enemy of Cape Town. And your lifestyle is very much a part of that, you know, your stay-at-home trophy husband lifestyle that you have in Somerset West.
Didn't you just hear all the work I'm doing?
Well, I don't know. I know you. I've been paddling and, you know, you're playing all those things. Whereas Dubai, work is the only thing you do. So I've been here for 2 days and I've just been so productive over the last 2 days and so excited. Next week I'm in Saudi and in Qatar. And so there's a lot happening in this part of the world. So a lot of exciting things. But let's get to our guest, because I'm so keen to do this. And most of us will know this incredible being from a podcast that went viral a few years ago. I think it was called London something. We'll get into that just now. And that's where I first met him. But let me introduce him before we get going. Today's guest is Dan Dapani, a Hindu priest, entrepreneur, and former monk of 10 years. With a degree in electrical engineering, he is the author of The Power of Unwavering Focus, translated into 23 flippin' languages. That's unbelievable. And his TED Talk has been viewed over 7 million times. And that's also somewhere where I saw him in action. Since leaving the monastery, Dan Dapani has worked with leading companies such as Nike, Bloomberg, American Express, McKinsey's, and has shared stages with global figures like the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, who I'm a huge fan of, former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, filmmaker J.J. Abrams, and Mark Zuckerberg. His app has been downloaded more than 140,000 times, and his courses have been taken in over 120 countries. He and his wife are also creators of a 33-acre spiritual sanctuary in Costa Rica, which I visited, and their dog is called Bruno, which I loved, where they've regenerated an abandoned land by planting over 9,000 trees and plants to support local biodiversity. Look, I've been there. It's beautiful and gorgeous. And Dan Dapani, welcome to our podcast. Great to have you here.
Thank you, John. So glad to be here and so good to see you again. And Eric, lovely to meet you as well.
Yeah, you too. First off, just Bruno, tell us more about Bruno. Is he, what sort of dog is he? I mean, Dandapani joined with me like smooching Atlasy on Riverside.
Yeah, you joined while you were kissing your dog. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, Bruno is a black Doberman. Bruno loves to chase a tennis ball, but what I heard from John is every dog loves to chase. I thought it was just only correct. Bruno. Super athletic, you know. I torture him every evening by throwing the ball up and down the hill, and he chases it, you know, until he almost collapses, which, you know, makes him super happy at the end of the day. Yeah, and he has 33 acres to run around, so he's a very happy dog here.
Happy guy.
Yeah. Very happy.
Yeah, he is a very happy guy. When I visited you in Costa Rica, he was awesome. I really loved meeting him. So, Dan DePandy, you have done some incredible work around the world. I know your story. You've shared it with me. I shared a stage with you in Las Vegas a year or two ago. That's kind of where we met, and then again rekindled in Costa Rica. Tell us a little bit about your experience in the sort of monasteries, what you were doing there, what that sort of world was like, and then we'll expand it into the next few topics.
Yeah, it was a very traditional cloistered Hindu monastery, so only monks under vows could live there. The monastery was on the island of Kauai in Hawaii, and my guru had founded it in 1970, though he had a monastic order that already existed before then. They just formed that as their headquarters. So when I graduated from engineering school, I moved to the monastery, and because it was a traditional Hindu monastery, you don't have contact with your family, friends, relatives. You have a very strict routine throughout the day. You're eating three meals a day. You're not snacking in between, you know, waking up at 4:30 in the morning. And the whole day is routined. The one thing I would say, even though my guru was very traditional in how he approached Hindu philosophy and the way we lived our lives, he was very embracing of technology, which made him a very different monastic than a lot of other monastics within the Hindu tradition. When the first Macs came out, he bought them, and we did desktop publishing. The monks used to publish newsletters with the Heidelberg press, you know, printing newsletters. Yeah. And then when the computers came out, he decided to go digital. And even Apple even did a whole documentary on this, like a 5-minute documentary on the monastery and the monks with Macs. So, you know, a lot of my technology skills came from the monastery, learning the Adobe Creative Suite and learning HTML, CSS. So monks learned to program, learned to edit videos, audio. So yeah, when my vows expired after 10 years of living there, I decided not to renew it. Instead of going back to Australia, I moved to the mainland US. And here I am, about 15 years or so
What made you want to go and do that? I mean, it's quite an extreme process to want to go. And did you initially have to say 10 years? Was that the sort of vow initially to do that? Or
no, the vows last 2 years. And then every 2 years, you renew them for the first 10 to 14 years before you take lifetime vows. And I always kind of jokingly say it's like you date before you marry. Unless you're in Vegas, then you marry and then you date. So, and it's a really nice process because, you know, it gives a person a chance to experience monastic life for a couple of years before committing for life or, you know, and then be able to renew that periodically before making a lifetime commitment. Because you have concepts of what a monk is by, you know, watching TV and reading books. And then you go there. And then, you know, all those concepts just go away and it's a whole different life. And you realize, oh my God, you know, I don't see the outside world. I don't connect with the outside world. I'm just in here in this monastery. Wow. Yeah.
At least Kauai is a beautiful place. I mean, you were obviously in nature and you were kind of, yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a win there, eh?
Yeah, if you're going to choose a place, that would be it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, since coming out, I'm no longer a monk anymore. I'm a priest. And in Hinduism, priests are householders, family people. So, you know, as you know, I'm married. Because I'm a householder, I can work and earn money. And so I'm an entrepreneur. I run my business, you know, based out of Costa Rica.
How are you taking the principles that you learned there and how are they being applied to organizations and sort of the lead into helping them with preparing their leaders for what's happening? How do you relate that into? What's the bridge over into that?
My guru was very focused on, like, you know, basic principles of the mind that everybody should know. You know, it's the 101. So, for example, look at a stick shift car. You know, you really need to know the clutch, the brake, the accelerator, the gears, and how to release the clutch slowly, press the accelerator, change gears. Once you get that down, you can drive the car. But if you don't understand those basics, you can't even drive the car. Then the next step is, you know, going faster, making sharper turns, doing donuts, or whatever it is you want to do. But the mind is no different. People don't have a basic fundamental understanding of the mind. And because they don't, they're unable to harness it and direct it. And one of the basic understandings of the mind is just understanding how does it work, and the ability to focus it. If I can't focus on you for longer than 3 minutes, how can I even hear what you're saying? And then, you know, communication breaks down. I hear bits and pieces. I misunderstanding creeps in. Everything just falls apart. So for me, it's let's go back to first principles, you know. Let's get a basic understanding of the mind. let's just learn to be focused. If I can focus, I can be present. If I'm present, I can hear what you're saying. We can communicate. Now we can build on that. But if you can't even do that, you know, why bother with the next steps?
I was actually watching a video yesterday, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember who it was, who was saying that when we grow up, a phrase we hear all the time is pay attention. You know, like we say that to our kids at home, we say it to ourselves in school, pay attention, but no one ever teaches you how to pay attention. You just get told to pay attention. And so there's actually a breakdown in that, like, how do you build the skill of paying attention?
Yeah, and I use a simple analogy in America for like piano. Like, I can't play the piano. If someone came up to me, sat me in front of a piano and said, Dandapani, play the piano. I'm like, how? I'd have to learn how to do it. And then the second thing is that I have to practice. And how much do I practice? Well, how good do I want to be? If I want to play for my Aunt Ethel on the weekend, maybe I practice 5 minutes a week. If I want to play for Juilliard, it might be 7 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I think focus is no different. Telling someone to focus or pay attention doesn't work. You got to teach them how to do it. And then you have to help them practice it. Because if you don't practice something, you don't become good at it. And one of the things I always say is that, you know, people are masters at distraction because that's what they practice every day. If you have 24 hours a day and just say the average person sleeps 8 hours a day and you're awake for 16 hours, how many hours a day does the average person practice distraction? If it's 7-8 hours a day, then what do you think they're going to be good at after 6 months? If I practice tennis 7-8 hours a day, I'm going to be good at tennis. If I practice the piano 7-8 hours a day, I'm going to be good at playing the piano after 6 months. If I practice distraction 8 hours a day, I'm going to be really good at it. So when you look at companies, you really have to ask leaders, have you taught your teams how to focus? And then have you then helped them practice it? Because what companies typically tend to do is, you know, we're going to turn off social media. They have no access to social media. We're going to have little rooms they can go sit in and not be distracted. You're doing all these patches you're putting on them. You're not solving the problem, which is actually teaching them how to focus. I can go sit in a busy cafe and work for 3 hours without being distracted because I know how to focus. Companies take different approaches, right? They build all these cubicles, these rooms, all these things to block everything out where they have missed the main point of actually teaching them how to focus. Because once you teach them how to focus, it doesn't matter where they are. They could be in the middle of Times Square or in the middle of a desert that still know how to focus.
You know, Dandapani, I think it sounds like the people setting up the structures don't know how to focus. That's the problem, right? It's they don't even know the rule sets that are required. So they think the cubicle and they think the room in the corner is the thing that's going to bring practice. I mean, focus, but it really isn't. So taking into account, you almost have to rewrite the rules of what an organization has to do to be able to bring in that focus into that organization. And then the question lies is, how does that play in with its addiction to certainty and high stress space? And so how do you marry those, and what's your experience been working with those leaders, trying to get them to understand that they might be even asking the wrong question?
Yeah, I think the first thing for me, it's always making the case to them, you know, making the case in the sense of what is the cost of distraction? How much time is being wasted? How much energy is being wasted? How much money is being wasted? If you're paying somebody 8 hours to work a day and they're distracted for 5 hours, why don't you just pay them for the hours they're actually focused? You know, and think about the, you know, I remember working with this fashion design company in LA once, and the lead designer was telling me, you know, I'm sketching something, the fall collection, and then someone comes up to me and goes, where did they move the photocopy paper to? So she turns around to answer that question and then comes back and she's lost her flow. Think what the cost of that is. And this happening every day because there's no system set up, no one's taught how to focus. There's no way to communicate if you're in a state of focus, you know. And once I think leaders understand the cost of focus, how much energy is being lost, how much information is being lost, knowledge, communication, then there's an impetus to do it. Because if you just say you need to teach your companies to focus, they go like, well, yeah, well, I need to teach.
Where do you even start? Yeah, when exactly. Yeah.
We start with my book, but you know.
Well, I've got a TED talk. Hire me for a keynote, a book.
Exactly. And it's not complicated. We do things because once we realize something, right? What's the difference between knowing something and realizing something? For me, knowing, a lot of people know things, very few people realize something, and realization causes a complete shift in behavioral patterns. When most people know that we all die. They see their dad die, they see their mom die, their cousin, their friend, and they go, oh my God, and they're sad, and then they just carry on like normal, right? Whereas for me, when my guru died when I was in the monastery, it brought a deep realization that life is finite. It's not short, it's finite. There's a clear, definitive end. And that made me get to a place of, I need extreme clarity as to what is my purpose in life? Have my purpose articulate my priorities in life. And now I need to learn how to focus and focus really well so that I can focus on my priorities that have been defined by my purpose, where the byproduct of doing that is I live a more rewarding life, a more fulfilling life, not a happy life, but a happier life, a more, you know, and be able to channel that finite time and energy towards things and people that truly matter in my life. So I think when leaders and companies realize, not just know, realize that distraction is hugely costly to productivity, efficiency, energy, time, bottom line financially, then they will start to implement it first, be a role model to everyone, you know, down the chain, and then start implementing. You can't tell your team to focus, and then you don't even focus yourself. And most leaders are guilty of this. And there's this really terrible narrative with entrepreneurs where they like to say, I'm an entrepreneur, so I have ADD and I can be all over the place, right? And that's part of a trait of being an entrepreneur. I remember sitting in a car driving for 2 hours with a man that built his company up to $2 billion. And in the hour and a half we spoke in the car, he gave me his undivided attention. And it showed me, look, here's a person that took his family's business, you know, from 9 figures to 2 billion, and he can focus for 90 minutes straight. So there's no reason you have to say that you're an entrepreneur and you can't focus, and that's a trait of being an entrepreneur. Why don't you be proud of saying, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm able to be completely present?
I think it's become trendy to say you suffer from ADHD.
Yes,
it's like, it is. It's become trendy. It's like,
Eugene.
When somebody says that to me, I said, aren't we all suffering from ADHD? I think I don't. It's like, that's kind of what's happening in the world right now. It's actually also saying that I don't know how to focus my brain and I'm okay with it, you know?
But think what the cost is, right? You know, you spend time with someone you love. You spend 5 minutes with your daughter, your husband, your wife, or 20 minutes, and you're not even present. You're physically there, mentally completely absent. And your subconscious has taught your mind, your face, to nod and go, that's really interesting. Right, wonderful. But you're completely somewhere else. And then you think of the time that's lost, you know?
So a few weeks ago now, I downloaded an app called AppBlock. And the idea for me was, because I was going onto my screen time and I was seeing how much time I'm actually spending on social media. And obviously, and because of the work that we do, we end up posting stuff on socials and we want to create content. And so a big part of being on socials is also the research component and the posting component and all of that. But there's no way it was that amount. So I realized I was getting in and then going down the rabbit hole. So I thought, okay, let me block this. But so to your point, this is a very superficial thing to do. And as you're saying it now, I realized that I've been practicing distraction so much. And what this app kind of showed me was that I would open it up through the day and it logs how many times you are trying to open up social media. And then it shows you that by midday, you've tried to open an app 20 times. And I'm almost not even like, I can't even remember like my fingers moving to the app to open it. It's so trained in me. But what it has allowed me to do is, and this is kind of the question that I have for you, is it's allowed me to step back and go, okay, now that I'm not doing this, you have to really pay attention to what you're going to pay attention to. And that feels to me like sometimes, because we don't have the clarity about what the action should be or what we are working towards, therefore, it's actually much easier to be distracted because I don't feel the connection to the bigger goal or to the vision or the value that I have, whatever. So is that, I don't know, in your framework or in the book, is that step one, is to be very clear about the bigger goal or the outcomes that you are trying to generate? Is that where it starts?
100%. But that would be step two, I would say, Eric. And step one would be need to be focused. Because if I can't maintain a state of self-reflection long enough, how can I look within me to find what it is I want to focus on, right? So I agree with you that, you know, having a bigger picture, having clarity of who and what's important in my life as a long-term vision, and being adaptable, as John always says, you know, as things change around us, then, but I need to focus. If I close my eyes and I say, I'm not going to meditate, I'm just going to be reflect on my life and what it is I want, and after 20 seconds I go, I wonder what I should have for lunch today. You know, should I have pizza? Someone calling me? Should I answer the phone? No, I'll probably leave a voicemail. What if they don't leave a voicemail? You know, and then I'll never find what I want. So first step is focus. Focus allows us to be self-reflective long enough to have to know what we want. Once we have that clarity, we can make a choice of focusing on that clarity. And with the other thing with the phone, you know, Eric, I would say is we should define our relationship with the phone. So as John was saying, you know, I have a big property here with gardens. I have a container with tools, with shovels and all kinds of things. When I need a shovel, I take the shovel out, I dig a hole, I plant a tree, I put the shovel back. But when I'm not digging a tree, I don't walk around with a shovel. So I look at my phone as a tool as well. When I need to use the phone to post, to whatever, I pick it up. When I don't need it, I put it away. Because I know if I don't define that relationship with the phone, it's going to take up my time. And that's time away from my spiritual practices, time away from my family, from the people that I love. And for me, they are a greater priority than the phone. And it can be so addictive to just perpetually be reaching. And it becomes so subconscious, right? How many times have you sat in a conversation with someone and their hand just goes up, picks up the phone, just sitting in front of you while you're talking, they're scrolling, right? For 2 minutes, they put the phone back down and continue listening to what you're saying. And I go like, you had no idea what you just did you?
Do you see us humans evolving in some way, or do you see us devolving? Like, what's going on? Like, it's like a weird thing is that we've got so much access and so much. I mean, it's better than it's ever been, and it's worse than it's ever been. And I've got my own theories around it, but I'd love to hear yours. Is that over the next few years, with AI coming and replacing many of the highly intellectual, highly repetitive jobs, which is a lot of the Western world services businesses, that stress and that anxiousness and that distraction is way even past what it is going to be now. At least you have money and you can eat now. Then that's going to change. Where do you see it going? How do you see it evolving? Because I think what you've done in Costa Rica, perfect. I mean, having gardens, you could obviously grow fruit there if you needed to. You could live off the land. I know you're on the way of moving a bit, but where do you see the Western world moving in this sort of major shift and the lack of ability to focus? What do you see?
I think people don't realize the difference between technology and living organisms. You know, we're so used to technology and the internet and the phone. And if you're waiting for something to download and it takes 10 seconds, you get frustrated. And because you have that experience all day long that anything you want technology-based, even ordering something and having delivered the same day, you know, getting food or parcels or Amazon same-day delivery, we take that demand for instantaneous gratification and we apply it to our life and go, you know, I'm going to hack my way through this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to eat this. I'm going to hack my mind. I'm going to hack my body. This is what people spend all day doing. I grow trees here. I planted fruit trees 10 years ago, and they're just fruiting now, you know, in the last couple of years. I had to wait all those years. There was no way I could accelerate the process. I had to nurture it. I had to protect bugs from eating it, you know, getting burnt during the dry season. I had to water it, you know, make sure it doesn't drown in the rainy season. Had to care, nurture it, and now I can get the fruits 8 years later. We are no different than the tree. When we try to hack our way through everything and treat ourselves like technology, we build anxiousness because we don't get the results we want. We can't sustain the results we want. We become impatient with ourselves. We become frustrated. We become depressed. We go, we're not changing. And then, so for me, the solution is to realize that we are living organisms and we change like trees, like the planet. Everything just takes time, and do the work. Simplify your life to a few clear goals that you want to attain. And be willing to take the time, I think, in terms of decades, right? 10 years to get something, to manifest something, to create something. So I'm willing to take time. And I know I'm like a tree and I have to do the work. And I may see the fruit 7 years from now, 8 years from now. But how many people do that way? Everyone I talk to, people come up to me all the time and say, hey, do you have a quick way to focus? Is that a hack? Yeah. I'm like, there's no freaking hack. There's no hack. Do the goddamn work.
Is there a trick to slow down? Like, what's the yeah. quick trick to
quick
slow down?
Trick, yeah.
Yeah, quick trick to slow down. Exactly, yeah. Always, everything. And look at that. Same with the body too, with the mind. Everyone is on this mission, you know? No one wants to do the work. No one wants to do the hard work, painful repetition work every day. And the same thing. And people can't do the same thing. My guru taught me a meditation in 1995. 30 years, I've been doing the same meditation. Well, you know what? People ask me, do you have a different meditation I can do? One with my cat, maybe one while I'm pedal boarding, you know, while I'm skiing or painting, you know, while I'm on the toilet.
Biohacking is, that biohacking is everywhere. Now that you're saying it, wow, yeah. It's like everywhere.
Why are we hacking everything? Why don't we just do the work?
It's like optimization. Everything must be more optimized, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because we do that with technology, which it's fine. It works for technology. You can optimize. You can be more efficient. But we're not technology. We're a living organism. We take time to grow and evolve. And if you're asking about evolution, if we keep going down the direction of just trying to hack everything, it doesn't work. I can't hack my relationship with my daughter. I've been nurturing it for the last 7 years by spending time giving her my undivided attention, my presence, my love. And that nurturing builds my closeness to her. How can I hack it? There's no way to hack it, you know? And once we realize that, then we stop going down this crazy path of hacking everything, and I have to do cold baths, and I have to do this, and wear a ring on my finger. Please, ring, tell me how I slept last night. Well, ask yourself how you slept last night.
I can't believe you're saying that, because I took my Whoop off. I had a Whoop on. I took it off. I was like, I'm done with a technology telling me how well I slept. I'm like, get out of here.
Why don't you ask yourself how you slept?
Yeah.
I wake up in the morning and I ask myself, our nervous system is the most profound, sophisticated, you know, set of wires and nerves in the entire universe. And if we can learn to harness it, understand it, calm it down, get to know it, we can learn so many things about our mind and bodies. We don't need a ring to tell us how we slept and to look at all the data every day on the app, you know? No, just get to know your body, get to know your mind.
You know, I think one of the most important things that we get to do, at least in the professions that we have, is that we get to change people's language. Because ultimately, when you can change language, you change thinking, when you change thinking, you change behavior. And a small thing, like shifting your language from hack to nurture, has such a huge impact in how you approach relationships and business. And that's amazing. I really like that.
Bio nurturing.
Biohacking, bio nurturing. Nice.
Yeah, much right? better. Much better. Yeah. So much
why
better.
Why would I want to hack?
Yeah.
You know, John, when you came here, we spent, what, half a day together? We sat on a veranda maybe for 3 hours, right? Looking at nature. John, we were chit-chatting. But there's no way to hack that and just get on a five-minute call. In that time we spent together and then going out for lunch and talking, we were nurturing our friendship.
That's right.
That requires time and patience and repetition. And how would we hack it? We couldn't hack it.
Oof, you know, you're actually making me think about all the things that I'm so good at nurturing and so impatient with, like, I've got to bring that nurturing idea into the symbiosis of all aspects of my life and allow things to breathe. And I realize that I'm so impatient in so many of the aspects. I mean, Eric, you used to be a super charged, irritated with things not moving fast enough. Eric's improved vastly over the last few years.
Vastly.
Honestly, no, you have.
Eric,
no,
I'm not afraid that you can come on this podcast and get an assessment.
Somehow I've survived 255 episodes. I don't know how.
You don't even need a ring, Eric.
Yeah.
Get rid of your ring. It's all gone.
I mean, Eric's the only guest who's been on my podcast so often. It's amazing.
So funny.
No, what I was going to say, Eric started something. He started meditating. That's it. Eric picked up a meditation practice and it's totally changed his impatience. Totally. And in fact, made you much more successful in many ways, you know? So it's because of doing the work. There's no way around it. Okay, so tell me...
One really quick thing, John. You know, I just want to go back to something Eric said right at the start. You were talking about companies and, you know, saying that we're family.
Family.
Mm. Right. And that's another way I completely agree with you. Words matter so much, right? It's like when you see in relationships and a spouse says to a husband or to the wife, you are so mad. Is mad the right word? Is it mad or are you annoyed or are you upset? Mad, I would imagine someone's just going apeshit in the house, throwing things around, you know? So the words we use are so important in describing things, right? So rather than family in the office, maybe it's another word. Instead of hacking, maybe it's bio-nurturing, right? So how we use words really determines, frames everything in our mind and brings clarity to things. And we need to have a shared vocabulary. That word for you and me needs to be the same thing. Yes. If we don't have a shared vocabulary, everything breaks down.
I mean, I made a post the other day about how masculine victory is about very violent terms. You're killing it. Get out there and smash it. Hit it through the roof. Like everything's about kill it. Kill it. I hope you're killing it. I'm like, whoa.
Crush
it. Kill anything. Mm. Yeah. Crush it. Crush it. Get out there and dominate. Remember, Eric, that's how we met. Eric,
that's how we
made. Dominate. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, bro, don't dominate anything. Just be with it. That's okay. We've actually got the language of domination and aggressive behavior. And it's so weird because when I'm watching, which I don't really watch much anymore, but when I'm watching a movie or a Netflix and I see violence, I feel terrible. I can't even watch it. And I remember back 10 years ago, everything we watched had violence in it and shooting and killing and slapping and hitting. And then you think to yourself, hang on a second, I don't want to be watching this. It's not actually something that's uplifting me. And this is, again, attached to the language and what we get used to with media pushing all of this stuff on us, you know? So,
and we have to make a choice, right? I mean, you know, 10,000 years or 40,000 years ago, it's okay to be violent. You have to go out and, you know, kill an animal and hunt or whatever. You know, we live in a completely different age now where we have so much of education and information. We're moving from that instinctive animalistic area to a more intellectual area of knowledge, and then the final stage is the intuition, channeling information from the superconscious, highly spiritual area of the mind. So when we're in this intellectual area, we don't really need to think in terms of going out and killing it or crushing it or violence, and we can talk and communicate, and all problems in the world can be solved through conversation if two people were willing to do it.
You shared an incredible example, which I have spoken about and thought about many, many times, about the mansion.
Yes.
And could you take our listeners through it? And also, Eric, I don't know if he's heard it, but I loved it. I've heard you speak twice about it, and both times so enthralling and such a beautiful example to think about. So please take us through it.
Yeah, in understanding the mind, the way my guru taught me is there's two things. There's the mind and there's awareness. You are pure awareness. And a simple visualization I give people is look at awareness as a glowing ball of light and the mind as a vast space with many different areas. So one area of the mind is technology, fear, anger, joy, happiness, sex, food, photography. And your ball of light, your awareness can travel within the mind. And wherever this ball of light goes within the mind, it lights up that area and you become conscious of that area of the mind. So if awareness goes to the angry area of the mind, it lights up the angry area of the mind. You become conscious of being angry. Are you angry? No, you're in an area of the mind called anger. Just as easily as you went there, you could move out of there and go to a happy area or a sad area. So the simple analogy I gave that you were talking about is that if you look at the mind as a mansion with 1,000 rooms, every room represented a different area of the mind. You, walking in the mansion, can choose which room you go into. So if you walk up the stairs and go down the hallway, enter the room of anger, close the door behind you, you will be engulfed with anger because that's where you are. But you walked in there, so you could turn around, open the door, go out, close the door behind you, walk down the hallway, open another room, go into the room of love, and just experience love. So every day we have a choice where in the mind our awareness is. And we can choose to move our awareness, or we can allow our environment, which is the people and things around us, to dictate where our awareness goes. So, you know, Eric, if you looked at me and said, Dhanapani, your shawl looks like an ugly kitchen rag, and I can allow you to take my awareness to an angry area of the mind and I can get upset with you, or I can move my awareness to a different area of the mind and respond with, oh, what a great opportunity to go shopping. Thank you for letting me know this. I'll, you know, find another shawl. But the goal is not to control the mind. The goal ultimately is to control where awareness goes within the mind. And when you can do that, where your awareness goes, my guru always says, is where energy flows. right? So he had coined this phrase, you know, in the 40s, where awareness goes, energy flows. So if my awareness goes to a happy area, energy flows then. It strengthens that area of the mind. And energy cannot discriminate between what's good for you and what's not good for you. It's like water, right? If I water the garden bed, the weeds grow and the flowers grow. Water can't tell the difference. Energy is no different as well. Whatever we put energy into will start to manifest in our life. And the way to do that is to focus awareness on what matters. And that's where energy flows, and that thing gets nurtured and starts to grow.
That's so good. That's so good. I mean, I see two things happening. One is that you have the stimulus and you have to choose where awareness goes. So like, you know, you get told something and in that moment you have to choose. I think that in my life, at least, I think that's the easier one. I think the much harder one is once I've entered a room is to get out of that room. And my wife and I, like, we get along very well. Like, we barely ever have any disagreements. But when we do, she's able to go into the door of like being a bit frustrated and irritated with me and come out of it pretty quickly. And I'll sit in that room and she'll be like talking to me. I'm like, how are you talking to me like nothing just happened? Like, I'm not there yet. I'm like, how do you move in and out of this room so quickly? So I think that would be my personal challenge, just getting out of that room.
Eric, can I just bring up this one point? I want to tie it to something, you know, I heard when John spoke in Vegas that I feel is so important, something I'm really keeping in the forefront of my mind. The ability to control awareness and move awareness out of the room, for me, is the critical skill that everyone needs to learn. And John, you talk about the future. Surviving the future is adaptability, right? If you cannot adapt, you will die. You will perish. So not being able to adapt is not being able to walk out of the room. It's going into a room and saying, you know what, I'm going to keep doing things this way because this is how it's always been done and that's how it's always going to be. The ability to adapt is to realize I am in the room no longer works. I need to move out of this room and move to another room and do things completely differently in this world of AI and everything. And if I don't have that ability to do that, I will perish. And so learning to control awareness is so critical.
Yeah, but I think that the picture that you've painted around, I'm in this room. I need to get out of this room. Why am I in this room? Why can't I get out of this room? The question doesn't become, why is my wife being like that? I can't believe she's taking advantage of me, blah, 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 all those stories. Oh, I'm in a room. I need to move myself out of this room. And it's almost like you have to force yourself to get out of it, to get that brain patterning to shift so that it's not continuously taking back into the room.
The rooms are very magnetic, you know, John. I would say, you know, every time your awareness goes to a room, that's where energy flows. Energy is emotion. Emotion is so magnetic that it holds you in that room. And that's why some people get stuck in certain areas of certain rooms. The key then is to go into that room and really get rid of the emotion that's attached to the room through therapy, through different exercises. Because once you get rid of the emotion, that emotion is energy, which is magnetic, and it's not holding awareness in that room anymore. It's the emotion, energetic intensity in that area of the mind is what keeps awareness trapped in those areas of the mind. That's why some people just can't leave, you know, the room.
Well, their whole personalities are not based on being in that room and can never really leave that room. You know, they're kind of like in that state. Yeah.
And then you see that's the critical state needed to survive the future, right? And where we're going.
Tell me, what is your daily practice like? What is your practice around bringing that focus in? What do you do?
Every day, my goal is to control where my awareness goes. So I can do it fairly well with the world around me. You know, sometimes when my wife says something to me, she has great power over my awareness and where it goes.
I see a commonality. Yeah, there's everything. Yeah, you too.
There's a commonality. You want to join my support group after this? We can
join the WhatsApp group. I'd love to join your support group. I don't know. Can I bring Bruno with me so I can hold him off? Yeah. My name is Gandapani, and this is what I need to share today. Yeah. So, you know, for me, John, the whole day is a beautiful opportunity to practice this, right? Every time you interact with a guy at the store or someone on the street or when you're driving and someone says something to you or cuts in front of you, you know, and you see awareness going to an upset area of the mind, your goal is to grab that ball of light as it's starting to travel somewhere you don't want to and bring it back and say, I don't need to go there. There's nothing saying I have to go there. It's a choice. And the more I'm able to control that, the more I'm able to control my reactions to the world around me and how I respond to things. And ultimately, you know, how we react and respond to things determines our outcomes in our life.
And tell us, how do you work with clients? Tell us about the process you take. What do you do? What are the services that you have for clients and corporates?
Yeah, so mainly, you know, with companies that I work with and mainly leadership, it's either through, you know, 6-month mentoring programs that we have with small group circles, like almost like a mastermind for entrepreneurs and CEOs and stuff that we have. So we do that. And then when I work with companies, usually it's workshops, half-day workshops, you know, is what I prefer as opposed to a keynote, because I feel like we can really dive deep into content. But the most important thing for me is just really getting people to understand the basics. You know, often people, when they hire me, are saying like, can you come and teach us how to meditate? And I'm like, we need to dial back even before meditating. Let's learn the basics of how the mind works. Let's learn how to control awareness in the mind. Let's learn how to focus. Let's learn how to practice it and integrate it into our life, where these fundamental, you know, first principle tools can just be part of who we are. And once we get that locked down, then we can start working on the other things. And everyone, like I said, is excited to do the fun, sexy stuff, and no one wants to do the boring, tedious work. And I really focus on the boring, tedious work, because that's the one that creates sustainable change, ultimately.
And so what sort of clients come to you? What are they stuck with? What would be the ideal client when they're thinking about working with you? What would they be suffering from?
I would say individuals, in terms of entrepreneurs and CEOs and, you know, C-suite executives and stuff, lacking clarity of what the future looks like. You know, one of the things I work with them is having a 50-year plan. So, you know, 50 years from today, where do you see yourself, you know, financially, in 5 categories: physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, and family-wise. So where do you see yourself physically? Are you able to walk? Do you need assistance walking? How's your state of mind? Do you have good memory, bad memory? You know, if you want to have good memory, then you should stop saying things like, oh, I'm terrible with names. If you say that every time now when you're 45 years old, I can guarantee you when you're 95, you can't remember crap, you know? So... but when you have a vision of what it is you want, then it's easier to know what to do now. We don't know what to take, what the next step is, because we don't know where we're going. So helping them having clarity around their personal life, and sometimes with the business as well, and how they are involved in the business, I think that's quite often the thing that most people are really lacking.
Eric, any final questions or comments?
I have lots of questions that I can still ask, but I think this is a great place for us to wrap. Dandapani, thank you so much for coming on the pod. It was great hosting you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for helping us to rethink language, and ultimately knowing that language shapes how we think, how we behave. And I think if my biggest takeaway definitely from today's pod is to think more about the things that I nurture versus the things that I hack, and to look for where that's happening in my life, and to spend more time on the nurturing aspect of it. So yeah, that was really good. That's and powerful. Thank you so much for it.
No, well, thank you, Eric. You were the one that came up with the nurturing. So instead of hacking, thank you.
Well, that's Eric giving himself a compliment indirectly. That's Eric's style. I've seen him do this a few times.
I was gonna argue with you, but then again, John is the master of the backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I can't help it. I can't build you up too much. I'm gonna build you up and then cut you down.
Yeah.
And cut you down. Like a plant, right? I'm treating you like a tree. I can't let you just go wild. I've got to keep
pruning. Some pruning is necessary.
Pruning, yes. Exactly. It's pruning. Well, Dandapani, I'm so glad that we're friends, and we're so glad that we've crossed paths. And for anybody listening to this podcast and you're looking for something spectacular at your event, I remember in Vegas when the lights went on and you were sitting there in lotus position doing your talk. I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it. It was such a beautiful visual. And your slides were so beautiful. It felt like I was watching you in a waterfall and in a whole nature thing around you in the middle of Vegas. And your talk was so impactful and so calmly delivered. So anybody out there looking for a keynote speaker around the topics of focus and leadership in the future, besides that, you can connect with him on his website, dandapani.org. and he's got meditation courses on there, and apps on there, and a book on there, and a TED Talk. Like, his TED Talk's been seen 7 million times. I think it's enough views. There's a TED Talk by John Sarney. Go watch that one first before you go to Dan DePaney. No, I'm joking.
You need to get John to 35 views.
I need to get to 25 views. Yeah, let me go to 26 views.
I'll go click on it today.
Anyway, yeah, Dan DePaney, tell me any closing statements from you, and before we close off,
I would just say, you know, to all your listeners, you know, your life is precious. It's finite. Value it. You know, it's also fragile, and don't assume that we will always live, have a long life. And I think that assumption is erroneous, to assume that. So for me, I look at my life as finite and focus first on yourself. Learn to focus, learn to reflect, gain clarity of your purpose, your priorities, and focus on that. And then once you do, the byproduct of that, you know, a more rewarding life, a more fulfilling life. And I think and be willing to take time, I would say, to do that.
I think that's the one thing I'm taking away here is just time. Just first appreciate the finite time you have, but then also just let the thing breathe, you know? Yes. So that's been huge for me, yeah.
Like a bottle of wine.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Exactly, like a good bottle of wine, exactly.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Eric. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and thank you for being with us on this expansive journey. You can find us all across social medias, and also we have a book out called The Expansive, which has become a bestseller, so please do go out there and support it. As usual, Eric and I will be on the road and traveling, and we'll be posting our next podcast. I'll most probably be in Saudi Arabia, and looking forward to sharing the latest research on physical improvement, leadership, and technology on our next pod. Until then, ciao.
Ciao.